And this is the sixth lecture of the Third South African. And it is the 2nd of February, A.D. 11. All right. Wiens is getting in this class the usual 60%. In other words, 60% case gains, 40% fall on your head. Of course, it's usually 10% that's the mess. That's usual in an ACC, that there's always 10% hang-up. That's just to keep up an average begun years ago. But look here. If you're going to get 40% failure in an ACC under some of the most competent Scientologists alive, what you think you're going to get on the outside, huh? Yeah, you're going to get about 2%, aren't you? So, I hate to bring this up. But here are your various points of case failure. One, you don't know how to audit. That's the biggest, broadest one. You know, you sit there with the E-meter,
down here and so forth.
You don't pay any attention at all to the PC. You know, PC, he's just something that's attached to the electrodes. He hadn't anything to do with that.
We got this thing, you know.
It's pretty grim. Now, there's the other reverse school. We put all of our attention on the PC and none on the E-meter. That works like this. You have a present time problem? No, he doesn't have one. That school of auditing is more prevalent than you think because it's laid in the first week of an HPA course. Confront the PC. Right? And you go on confronting the PC at the expense of the E-meter. There's nothing drives an old-time Scientologist quite so batty as to be audited by somebody who is doing that, though. You have an ARC break? Now, how long ago was that? Was it longer than 10 years ago? No. We're going to develop a special E-meter for people who do that. We're going to build a 3-second comm lag into the needle. So by the time they do look at the meter, they'll still have a reaction. Well, that's the first thing that's wrong. Mishandling of the E-meter and the PC, one or the other. Next thing that goes wrong is the commonest failure. Is the auditor audits his own case, not the PC's. Now, once upon a time, one of the original investigators on E-meter circuits, not the original by a long ways, but one of the originals, a fellow named Matheson. There's still a lot of Matheson meters around in the United States. Now, I give the devil his due. He did a good job, and then he got more and more complex, and eventually nobody could read a Matheson, so we had to do something else. But he did this interesting trick. He took a lot of failed auditing teams. And he took the PC and the auditor and put each one on separate meters. And then he went over the auditing and the processes which had been and were being unsuccessful with the PC. And he got a fall on the auditor's meter, but no fall on the PC's meter. How do you like that? The auditor was auditing his own case out of the PC. Well, that's fine. As a matter of fact, you take very broad processes. We used to do this on an HGC. We'd get a new field auditor, new HGC staff auditor, and of course, these chaps always have to be trained, one degree or another. And so on. As a matter of fact, here in this unit, some of you have been staff auditors, HGC, and your auditing on your grade sheets and so forth shows up here out of this world, you know, compared to the field auditor. All right. Because it takes a lot of training, because you have to get results, you see. All right. So here we go. The field auditor has been heavily working over a PC. Brand new, you see. See, he's just on staff. He gets no results. See, practically doesn't matter where he went. But you tell him, now what process have you had the most success with? And he'll come up with a process that broke his own case. See? And he'll say, 8C. Well, now, if it's a good, broad, general one of this character, why, the D of P is perfectly in his own rights to say, audit that on your HGC PC. Because he knows he'll get results. He knows this new staff auditor will get results. But, of course, that has a limited application. There was a question like, what wouldn't you mind shooting your mother-in-law with? Or something like this, you see, that the auditor got a lot of reality on, and that doesn't work on the PC in the first place. He isn't even married. So this works only with good, broad, general processes. You can always take a brand new staff auditor and say, well, now, what processes have you got the best results with on your PCs in the field? And if he says something like 8C or SCS and connectedness or some such process of this character, which is good and broad in its application, you're always safe for 2 or 3 weeks just to say, all right, go ahead and run that on your PCs, and meantime, we'll gen you in. It works. It works very well. So we come to this point. It's subjective reality. If you don't have much subjective reality on whether a process is going to work or not, of course, you don't put much oomph into it. So therefore, really, to overcome a lot of these points, you have to have processes that take off right now, get results right now, which establish a reality wow right now, and take the case right off in spite of bad auditing, in spite of mess-ups with the E-meter, in spite of this, in spite of that. You see, that'd be the ideal process. Now, HAS Co-Audit 1 comes about as close to the perfect process as there is. If I gave you a list of the things that HAS Co-Audit 1 solves, see, I cut out the co-audit because it was impossible. It was the way the co-audits were being run around the world, it just make you hold your head in your hands. In the first place, they're running clearing processes, then somebody gets transferred to the HGC, the same processes are run on the person, but they're already so ARC broke, and he's got so many overts on him, his processes, they don't work. So it's about a 10, 15-hour job trying to clean up the co-audit. You got the idea? Wow. All right, another thing that would happen is these people are sitting there amongst a bunch of strangers. They're not well processed. Their communication has come up to being withheld. And they're sitting there with these overts that they're trying to, they don't dare mention. Of course, nobody's asking them for any overts. And there they sit, you see, with the overts. And wow, they'll blow. Now, that's the most important point. The overt withheld continuously gets into re-stimulation and causes a blow. There are other reasons why these people blow, but just that one is good enough. Now, person come in with a PTP, but of course that couldn't be run because it was no part of the co-audit rundown. None of the rudiments could be handled. No overts could be handled. Nothing really could be done for the case. So I said, well, We've loused up some people. We've lost people. Not loused them up particularly. We certainly lost them. So let's reform, and I'll just stop the slaughter by stopping the co-audits around the world. And then maybe if I'm very lucky, in the course of a few months, I might be able to get a process like this, but it is unlikely. A process that resolves all the rudiments, takes care of all PT problems, takes care of all ARC breaks, takes care of all overts and withholds, take care of this, take care of that. You make a list of them. I did make a list of them. I haven't got it here. It's about 40 different things this process has to be able to do, besides undercutting all cases and, yeah, you know. Now, I took a look at this and I said, oh, that's just too much. That's too much. And the next day said, well, what about ARC? What about ARC? 2 days later, well, I had it licked. Of course, it's ARC. ARC triangle combined with rising scale. Of course, it takes care of all those things because it takes anything that's on the PC's mind. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what, in 2,000 hours, you couldn't clear somebody with it. 2,000 hours, be about right. Get him up to release. But it keeps him interested and actually does him a lot of good on a slow haul. And it's not a bad process at all. But to shake the case up, you needed another process. So the common denominator of all psychosis is attack. It isn't true that all attacks are the result of psychosis, but it is true that all psychosis is the result of attacks. So we take HAS co-audit 2, and we just say attack. You know, attack, not attack. And a little of that goes a long way in a co-audit. And they get some dear, sweet old gentleman sitting there who has been the pride and dignity of the chartered accountants of Southwest North. And you say, now, attack, you know. There he goes, really chewing into it, you see, with a mad show of teeth. It's quite interesting. You wouldn't think he had that much attack in him. Of course, these obsessive withhold cases are obsessive attack cases, and that's why they're withhold cases, because they might attack something. So you kind of cure them of this obsession of attacking, and they go up along the line. But you need an awful lot of HAS co-audit 1 to a little bit of HAS co-audit 2. Well, so far, so good. Now, there actually exists today, by just dumb luck rather than anything else, a fool process that actually could get results without an e-meter, and without auditing, and without an auditor, and without much of anything. But we're not after this kind of game. We're much more interested in getting someplace with the case. Now, to do that, you've got to undercut the case. That is to say, you've got to get down to his level of reality and get a bit below it so that it's real, real what's happening. And a system now exists by which this can be done, and it requires a new type of assessment. Now, you have the formulas. Well, for heaven's sakes, don't lose those, because those have been cracking lots of cases. Lots of cases have been cracked by these formulas as they exist. So don't lose them in the shuffle. The favorite method of procedure, you know, is to get something terribly successful and then change it and lose it. And that's no good. The clearing procedure of May, June, and July of 1960... in the hands of D's of P's in most central organizations, was clearing people. Now, that's something for you to remember. That we call now the regimens. And although the St. Hill ACC was running 6 dynamic terminals only, you'll notice what's being quoted as a regimen now is a dynamic assessment to find the terminal necessary to resolve the case, and then help is run on that terminal. It's a little bit fancier help because remember that two or three years ago we had a big rash of clearing going on in which we were running a five-way bracket of help, so that's been added in. But this is something to preserve. This is something to remember and preserve. And these formulas which began to crack cases here in South Africa and so on, they must be very well kept in mind. These are very effective tools. A similar regimen, SCS and connectedness, should be kept firmly in mind for England. That and Opro by Dupe have raised enormous numbers of profiles with the greatest of ease in England. The process, SCS and connectedness, and Opro by Dupe. Of course, these are all forms of 8C and the CCHs and so forth. That whole body is less successful in America and Australia and South Africa than it is in England. In fact, it isn't successful in South Africa. CCHs possibly are, but not these others. So we've run into a national peculiarity here at long last. I knew we'd get up to a point sooner or later where we would start undoing the nationalisms of cases. And the UK case is an absolute pushover for SCS and connectedness. It's just a pushover. And the CCHs and so forth. Question what to run in England, we'll just run the CCHs and SCS and connectedness. You get results, that's all. Of course, that's true on lots of PCs in other parts of the world, but it is pretty nearly uniformly true in England. I remember the DFP in England kept putting through pathetic communications when he was asked to run other things that would get cases off the launching pad. Couldn't he please run the CCHs? Please, please, please. He kept this up for several months. Nobody listened to him particularly, mostly because his auditors were inexpert in running the CCHs, which had a lot to do with it. Now, it takes a lot of skill to run the CCHs. You've got to be a pass master at upper indoc and getting that intention into the ashtray and so forth. You really got to be good at this for the CCHs to bite. But SCS and connectedness are rather easy to run. SCS, by the way, has only failed in such cases where the case couldn't be started because it was already started. That's an interesting one, isn't it? You say, when I say start, you start that body in that direction or some such command. The body's been started for years. Matter of fact, has been started so long that the case wouldn't know what start meant and doesn't know what start means. Everything is continuation. So there's a fourth one there. It's when I say stand still, you make that body stand still. Stand still. Did you make that body stand still? Thank you. Of course, this absolutely slaughters a case. This is grim. Tremendous number of cases that go around with the usual St. Vitus dance attendant to living in the 20th century. Can't do this one very easily, and it takes a long time to flatten. And it's a sort of a second cousin to step six. So auditors probably won't be very happy with it. But it exists anyhow and hasn't been known to kill anybody yet, but then hasn't been tested much either. I give you the warnings that go along with that. Now, here's what we're progressing toward here. We have in this ACC, and ACC always has a bit of new research and development to cope with, and we have in this third South African here, the new assessment scale. Now, this is the scale from which formulas are made. And it may very well be that this new assessment scale, HCO Bulletin of 28 January 1961, has holes in it. there may be additional buttons on this scale. I give you warning to that effect. But if the scale were totally complete, it would then have in it, inherently, any process that would crack anybody who would answer an auditing question. You see, so that's a very valuable scale. Now, the genus of this scale, the actual title of the scale, is the pre-havingness scale. Pre-havingness. A formula, you know, is a pre-havingness activity. You have yet to establish clearly and cleanly the PC's havingness. So therefore, by running out all of the things which prevent him from having, we get up to a point where he can have. The stability of a case depends upon the havingness of the case being remedied, continuing to be remedied, and the havingness of the case in a very stable condition. When the havingness of the case is in a stable condition, the gains of the case are stable. When you do not have the havingness of the case, you do not have a stable gain. So you could be fully prepared to run these pre-havingness things. This is an extremity. Run some line of it here. And have the PC just feel wonderful and walk out of the session and come back into the session just feeling like hell. Got the idea? You cannot expect stability before you have the havingness of the case resolved and run. This, all during the last 11 years, has been one of the bugs of Dianetics and Scientology. Some cases remained stable, some cases didn't remain stable. What was the answer to this thing? Some clears were stable, some clears were not stable. What was the answer to this thing? The answer to it is havingness. Havingness means that when an individual can have his environment, he can then remain stable in environments. But when he cannot have his environment, he is only stable in the instant and for the moment of the session. But the second he gets out of the session and walks down the street, of course, he gets an instability because he's running into missed six dynamic restimulators continuously. And these are the things which are knocking his head off. So, of course, they unstabilize his case all the time. Now, the other point is that a case to be stable must have a point of reference. And the point of reference of a case is the sixth dynamic present time. If a case can have present time, messed universe, the case has a point of reference to which the bank can be referred. But if the PC cannot have a point of reference called present time, messed universe, he has nothing with which to compare the bank to. And of course then, slides willy-nilly from engram to engram and through this and that. Now if you run just one case through one engram, you will realize that it is assuming various tones and conditions at various points of the engram, right? One moment he's sad, one moment he's happy, and then he's relieved, and then he's upset again, and he goes through all sorts of oddities here. He gets reactions. Now, these reactions gradually level out, and he comes up tone scale. But as he slides through the engram, and as you put him through the engram, he assumes different tone levels and has different reactions, right? Well, supposing he was just in the engram, sliding back and forth through the engram, would you look for much stability? You see, there'd be no point of reference in the engram except maybe the beginning and end of the engram, but the beginning and the end of the engram are not points of reference because there were lots of beginnings before that and lots of endings after that. So lacking an exact point of reference, he will slip up and down the time track, not just through an engram. But he walks out here and he's in sees a car and he's in one point of the time track, and he sees a girl and he's in another point of the time track, or she sees a fellow and she's at another point of the time track. And you got the idea? The bank just goes on shifting, shifting. He's just moving in various positions out of PT, right? Now, if the person's havingness has been well established and well run, the person can have the environment. And the knee plus ultra of this thing is, sees the automobile, can actually recognize that that is an automobile now, and is not necessarily the automobile then. That the girl is the girl now, not the girl then. That the fellow is the fellow now, not the fellow then. You got the idea? So a complete establishment of what PT is gives us an awareness of time, an awareness then of differences of location and whenness, and gives us those differences, and so a person can remain stable because he can refer things to this thing called present time. Until he can do that, however, he is not stable. Okay? Now, this whole activity then of the pre-havingness scale is to give the case a reality where it lives, which must be someplace on the track. That's fascinating, you see. The only available reality to this case is not present time, but the track. Somewhere on the time track. That's this circumstance here. Now, we call it the pre-havingness scale because it is run willy-nilly, whether or not the individual can have or can't have. This would be the scale you assessed in order to undercut the case. Now, you might realize that the bottom of the ARC tone scale is a whole area, not the bottom, the bottom of the original, around the Aryan zone of apathy. There are a whole bunch of impacted emotions. There's the apathy of anger and the apathy of fear and so on. And you get a mockery of the whole tone scale condensed into that boredom, apathy area, you know. The individual will say it's boredom when it's apathy. And he gets all mixed up. And every once in a while you'll get somebody who actually does get bored after he has only been apathetic, and he suddenly cognites on what boredom is. Now he's getting upscale, you see. Well, similarly, this pre-havingness scale has a jam around the bottom. Just everything gets closer and closer and more impacted, and finally it's almost indistinguishable. And you could be very prepared on a small percentage of cases to do an assessment and find him up rather high and say, well, isn't that interesting? He's running well on fail control. Isn't that fine? And so therefore, naturally, next time we're going to run him on control and fail communications. And then find out the guy has a long history as a pervert, so he's down here at inverted interest. This is going to be very upsetting to you. You get the idea? I mean, here's what happens. You assess up every time to find where you have landed the case, not where the case is situated permanently. You're looking for the new landing spot. Now, this is more or less correct. This having this interest, communication, control, help, overts, withholds, importance, leave, protect, abandon, inverted help, inverted control, inverted communication, inverted interest, and of course obsessive can't have. That's pretty well in line. You'll find that the bulk of the cases that you process, all of them, this is one of the basic rules. They try to help somebody and fail. And they commit overts against them, which makes them start withholding themselves. And then they start telling the person how important they are and threatening to leave, and then they leave. But if they can't leave, they start protecting various things, particularly themselves. But when a protection is gone, then they have to do something hysterical like abandonment. Now, you'll find that cycle of action applies to almost all human behavior that you will ever observe outside of Scientology. It'll go down that cycle. So So that cycle is fairly solid. Now, the upper one, having this interest, communication, control, and help, this is only new in that it's got havingness at the top. You say, well, how did havingness get at the top? Because interest obviously has something to do with havingness. No. Havingness would be havingness without interest, without a necessity to communicate, with no need to control, with no necessity to help. You wouldn't have to do a blessed thing. That's up there about tone 40. Got it? That's tone 40 havingness. The universe is over there, or it exists somewhere, and that's enough for somebody to be able to have it. No other mechanisms are necessary in order to have havingness. I mean, no mechanism is necessary to have havingness, including communication, which is pretty important. Now, I won't blame you if you have a difficult time understanding that, because I have people around me who have an awful hard time understanding some of these things. I'm not necessarily tone 40 all the time, but I do get up there once in a while on some piece of havingness. And the havingness situation will be that I've got a camera. And I never use it. I never look at it. I never gloat over it, never show it to friends, and do nothing whatsoever with this camera. It simply sits safely in a closet somewhere. I have such a camera. It's probably one of the historic cameras of all time. It made in about 1870 out of cherry wood. It has a lens that is rather fabulous. It's an 8x10 plate camera. It was owned by a very, very famous painter. And he used to take his scenes with the thing, and when he died, I was aware of his camera, and so I asked a relative of mine, who was a relative of his, for this camera, and I've had it ever since. I took a couple pictures with it once to see if it'd work. Beautiful 8x10 plates. Worked beautifully. I put it away, and it's been away ever since. I've never shown it to anybody. Once in a while, I check up on it, make sure it's there. And people get a little upset about this. They say, well, how come? If you own something, you have to use it. I can leave an extraordinarily fine specimen of a motorcycle in a garage, polished up, and start it often enough to keep it from congealing, and never ride it. And it drives people batty. They just go batty, that's all. You just see that thing there, and they know what you're supposed to do with it. You're supposed to ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it, ride it. See, you're supposed to never do anything else but ride the motorcycle. Got the idea? You're at least supposed to run it out to the motorcycle clubs or something of the sort and say, look at my motorcycle. See? You at least should become emotionally interested in it and have all sorts of histories concerning this motorcycle around, you see, and read books about it all the time if you're not going to use it. Do I strike any echoing notes in you? Well, now, that's what I mean when I say havingness minus interest, minus communication, minus control, minus help. It's just havingness. Now, I don't invite you to get into that state necessarily with regard to mist, but I do call to your attention that when a person can't quite have something, they become interested in the subject of it. When they can find their interest lagging, they communicate a lot about it. Keep their interest up. And then they seek to control some zone or sphere with regard to this item. Take a gun crank. That's actually a technical word. That's somebody who is real hot on the subject of guns. He, when he goes down scale on this thing, he'll eventually join the army.
That's for sure.
Now, eventually, he'll join a society for the conservation of ancient muskets used in the Dingaan campaign. You see, that's how far he is from actually having what he started out to have. You see, he goes to pieces on it. And you'll find in a very can't-have area, in an extremely can't-have area, you'll find these things far more prevalent than they are in our society. Stop a motorcycle on a street in Spain. You've had it. Just stop one, and you've had it. You are instantly surrounded. Now, the motorcycle is associated in their minds with their word for gentleman, caballero. And a motorcycle is the modern substitute for a horse. And you almost get mobbed. These characters will come around and tell you about a Harley Davidson they saw 300 kilometers from there one time, and they'll talk to you for an hour about it, you see. But this is pretty good. This is pretty good because they still are aware of the existence of the object. See, that's not a very low-tone country, Spain. Kind of amazing for its lack of havingness and so forth, how it manages to carry on. But it does. But you get what I mean here. We fall away from havingness on that track. Well, now the track goes further. When the individual is not permitted to form a society to preserve the muskets used or the rifles used in the Dingaan War, that's pronounced on purpose wrong, the guy will say, well, to hell with those muskets. What's anybody got, you know? Must have a bug in his belfry to be interested in those weapons. You know, crazy. You know, no good. See, he wasn't permitted to form the society or carry on with it, so now he starts getting overts against this activity. Now it goes further than that. Everybody says you shouldn't talk that way, to such a point that he eventually doesn't talk that way. He consciously doesn't attack this subject, you see? Now he will assert the fact that he himself is important, or that there are importances about it. You take the early Calvinist minister on the subject of dancing, and just follow his deterioration on the subject of dancing. Actually, he had a world at the time that was very fond of village dancing, and people would get out and express themselves with choreography of one character or another. And the early boys in this particular religion apparently all had wooden legs. Because eventually it became terribly important not to dance. Oh, man! She danced, burned at the stake. You know, bang! Terrific importance to this. Well, this would be natural because the withhold makes mass, and importance and mass are synonyms. Those things are synonymous, importance and mass. So importance stems from withholds. The funny part of it is, if you find somebody in the world who is really important, he probably is the last one to believe it. But if you find somebody who's terribly unimportant, he's probably the first one to believe that he is important. You get this off motion picture cameramen and prop men and that sort of thing in Hollywood. This is where it first struck me along about 35, 36. It was fantastic. Oh, my God, did these people hate with violence the young, untrained, their ladies present, so I won't say how this starlet got there. She's a character, see? And they just hate to work on the same lot with her, that's all. And she's no good. She doesn't have any public appeal. If she has any importance at all on the screen, it's a flash in the pan. You get the idea. And they don't want to work with her. But you'll find some of these birds really breaking their necks to work with somebody like Gary Cooper or Marlon Brando or somebody like this. Guys that are real artists, real good, so forth. Because these birds don't think they're important. You know, you want to take that again? All right, we'll go through it again. You want me to jump off the cliff again? Okay. Hey, these fellas are way up on the subject. But you take a writer's conference in Hollywood is ghastly. Because the real writers, there'll be two or three of them at the conference, and they'll want to get the show on the road. But then there'll be all the nephews and cousins of the producers who were just on the payroll because writer is such a nebulous word, they can be assigned to that division, you see. These guys are affronted. They have stupid suggestions. They gum the whole works up. They bring everybody down to practically tears. But it's they who walk off in high dudgeon because they're so important. Got this? You hear the word big shot across the world as a piece of slang, which outside of New York City, even in the rest of America, doesn't have the same meaning as it has in New York City. Big shot in New York City is one of the most derogatory terms that could be applied to anyone. It means somebody who has nothing on the ball, who is swanking it, oh my God, coming over everybody and making life miserable, particularly for bellhops, doormen, and waitresses. That's a big shot. Very derogatory. It is a fellow who has importance without any reason for it. You see where we go on this scale. It tracks on down. Now that bird easily blows, and you will see him in restaurants blowing. They don't realize his enormous importance, so therefore he leaves with the meal half eaten, isn't he? He isn't getting the right treatment from the management in the hotel, so he moves out. We're getting now down into the shakier sides of life, and I don't mean this to be derogatory to anybody who runs these levels, because I assure you that anybody has something somewhere on the line connected with this stuff. But we get down to protect, and we find after the fellow has committed this many leading overts after a while, he starts protecting himself. See, importance fails, so he leaves. Well, supposing leaving is, he eventually realizes that this is no panacea. So he gets a failure in leaving. Now, he starts protecting, and he becomes very protective. But when he starts to fail to protect, now he comes down to the level of furiously abandoning life. And that is not just leaving, you see, that's leaving with no responsibility whatsoever. Boom, you know, zing. Now, when he can't even abandon things, he's had it. So he goes into the line of help is betrayal. All control is bad. Communication is terrible. And the only things you can be interested in are extremely unlikely, let me assure you. Now, of course, he goes from there into him, says he can't have, and he can't have anything. But now looky here. That's a rather derogatory general look. Now, let me tell you something else about this. That every terminal with which a person is associated has a different reaction toward it. What's odd here is the life is not one long, wide plane, you see, where it is all the same. A fellow will be at failed abandon on women, able to control cars, very interested in stocks and bonds, knows that any time you get any help from a bellhop, it's betrayal. See? The various terminals in life, when one falls away from havingness, then have their own havingness connotations. Now, all you've got to do is get rid of the most obsessive of these on the lower scale, and away you go. So although a person would, in general, walk up this scale from the bottom to the top, on a generality. He doesn't walk from the bottom to the top smoothly as you run these things out, because you keep running into lower grade terminals. And the first look at the case is that the guy is deteriorating. You'll probably get some fairly high-level terminal. You see, some high-level reaction toward a terminal. And then the next time you assess, you're going to get a lower level. You see, you assessed this fellow, and it was failed importance. And that was what was really kicking this case to pieces. And this is what you assess for and got. And now you're going to run that a little bit flat, and then you're going to assess the thing again, and you're going to get failed abandonment. You'll say, wait a minute, this case is going bad, not going good. Why? Because you got rid of one strata of terminals, and now you've fallen into another strata of terminals. And let me assure you of this. The individual's reality has to do with his reality on the terminal in which he is currently being fixated. And every one of your assessments is simply an assessment of the terminal on which he's fixated. And as soon as you wipe out that terminal, you've got another terminal on which he is less fixated. And so, of course, it's liable to be any place on the scale. So nobody is going to assess smoothly from bottom to top. So you have to assess from bottom to top every time. I told you about attention units being fixed in the bank. You're going to have somebody who ran with holes rather successfully and then mysteriously is having an awful time running failure to protect. Well, what you haven't noticed is the with holes were on the subject of women. See, it was a girl. And she could easily withhold from women. But now, the bank has shifted because of your auditing. And you're running into the fact that you're now dealing with attention units on men, and it's a total failure to protect men. Only she never mentions this, you see. And we come to probably the last thing that a fellow should mention with regard to not being able to audit, and that is cases change. And when an auditor fails to realize that cases change, he's trying to audit the same case at the end of 75 hours that he started to audit 75 hours ago. In other words, it's no such thing. The person's attention is on entirely different things. It's the same person, true, but that's the only thing there is the same about it. The person's attention is on entirely different things. Well, this picks his attention up off various terminals in the bank, which are can't-have terminals. The severity of the terminal is the degree of can't-have of the terminal. So at first, you will get terminals that the PC can almost have. That would be quite common, to get terminals the PC could almost have. But then he begins to realize that there are other terminals that he couldn't have at all. And on the next assessments, you get those. And gradually, you winnow out this situation and get him up. Now, the only reason he can't have present time is because he hasn't enough attention in present time in order to observe present time. We're using that quantitative aspect of attention. It isn't necessarily true, but it's an awfully good example. So let's supposing that we have a PC who is terribly worried on the subject of control of teachers, and this became a tremendous obsession as a child, who has enormous withholds from the wife, who is going to leave his job at any moment, who is unable to abandon junk. Whole backyard, you know, it's just getting more and more, and the drawers and other things, it's more and more. You can't abandon junk, you see. And has the idea that if people talk to him, he'll go batty. All right. Supposing they were real in just that order. Therefore, you would find control as your first assessment, withholds as your second assessment, failed abandonment as your third assessment, inverted communication as your fourth assessment, and then let's say somewhat healthily, and so forth, that It's fail protect, which is the next one, and you'll get him on the scale upward. But it's apparently a deterioration before it starts to get better. That's simply because of the phenomenon of the terminals he cannot have at all are less real to him than the terminals he can have somewhat. And what you're doing is fixing his attention on the bank, and he can get it on PT, therefore he can have in PT. Now, the way you use this is to start a model session. When you get down to the process you're going to run, you don't do a process, you do an assessment from the bottom up. And you just call off these points in various ways. And the first fall you get as you go up, you say, that's it, and you run it. And you run it fairly flat. Now, let's not kick it to death, huh? Let's get that tone arm wobbling a little bit and looking a little bit more optimistic. Let's get the needle a little looser. And so it doesn't fall, and so that the person doesn't look like he's going to explode when you simply mention this word to him. Let's get it a bit flat. Just a bit, see? Let's take the edge off of this thing so that it doesn't make the needle misbehave. All right, that done. Now, that might take you 20 minutes, and that might take you 3 hours. But that's about all it's going to take you. Because it's all pre-haddingness. You're just trying to take the edge off of this case. That's all you're trying to do. You don't think you're going to get this case anyplace before you have haddingness, do you? Well, you're not. You do another complete direct assessment. You know, you just open it up with a model. So you're finished with that other. Let's open it up now with a model session and let's do another assessment. Just end the session when we end that line. And then let's do another model session and, you know, open it up and do another assessment and go right on up the line. And all of a sudden, the needle falls. The second the needle falls, there he is. Now, there are two ways in which to handle this thing, and in this class, at this time, we are not going to complicate the handling of this. You're just going to run what falls. And that is the simplest thing you can do. Some more experimental use has to be made of this scale. I have to do a bit more research on it. But the probability is that it should run this way. You assess failed importance as the button, so therefore you run also leave in a formula. In other words, you just take one down, one line down. If you assessed leave, you would also run fail leave, and you'd run them for about 10 minutes each, one and the other. But we're not going to do that right now. You can do that in the HGC, staff auditors, but we're not going to, we just run them as a formula, in other words. We're not going to do it in the class. We're just going to take the kick out of each one of these lines and reassess, okay? Now, the way you'd make a formula is to get the assessment, get the fall. It's fail leave, so therefore you're going to run fail leave against protect. You're going to run, what have you failed to leave? What has failed to leave you? And then you're going to run, what have you protected? What has protected you? 10 minutes to one, 10 minutes to the other. That would be the way you made a formula out of it. Now, some of the wordings on this assessment you will find to be rather tricky, because you can't look at somebody and say, do you have any inverted interests? So you have to be slippy on this assessment, just like you have to be slippy on a dynamic assessment. You can't run a dynamic assessment on the raw public and say, all right, now, how do you feel about the first dynamic? No communication and no language. Similarly, it works this way. You would say something on the order of, do you have any interest that other people might possibly consider peculiar? You'd say, what's wrong with communication? These are the assessment questions for running this thing. You see. You'd say, is control pretty bad, or is it all right? You'd say, is all help betrayal? Or is help really betrayal? Or do people help you? They're really trying to get next to you somehow or another. Now, in view of the fact that all you want is a needle fall, you won't make any mistakes because of your wording. Because you have got something yet to find out. When the needle falls, it falls. And do not send to find for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for the PC right there. You have yet to learn something that's very heartening about this scale. It's a nothing else, no decision sort of scale. The needle falls, that's it. It is not equivocal and won't become equivocal for some time. When you get this whole thing sort of cooled off all the way up the line, yes, you'll start getting equivocal reads. But when you first start up this scale, you'll get some kind of reaction like this. You'll say, how do you feel about failing to abandon things and so forth? Nothing. Do you ever abandon anything, or do you like to abandon things? You ever fail to protect anything? There you got your drop. Bang, it's right there. The PC will just be looking at you and say, how did you know, you know? Wow. Because what you're looking for is where the PC's attention units are fixed. And, of course, you get a rather nasty reaction right at that point. You got it? If his attention units are fixed there but unreal and he doesn't know it, you won't get a fall. That will come later. See, he's got attention to spare that's fixed over there, but he doesn't even know it. So this all the time comes close to knowingness. When you get a fall, it will be a fall. Do not take something you wonder whether it is a fall or not. Work for a fall and run that. If you're making a formula out of it, take the one that fell and step down one from it. If you're just running it straight, just take the fall and run that. What is the auditing command? Well, that's got to be shifted here and there. And the only goofball auditing command in this whole list is leave. You start running leave and not leave, and you're going to be in trouble. This pair is taken care of for the moment until we get some better ones. Where would you rather not be? Where would you rather not be? Keeps up the havingness. Otherwise, you just run the havingness of the PC out through the bottom. You increase his willingness to be places, and you will increase, of course, his ability to stay with them. There's only one other remark that one could make with regard to these commands, and that is, you have to get a command that is real to the PC and that works. And commands are actually no part of this scale or this particular lecture I'm giving you. I'm talking to you about the basic theory of getting a case unfixed from where it's fixed. There's even such commands as, when would you rather not be? That runs the whole time track. It's a rather fantastic process all by itself, and it's also a leave process. Now, this scale itself, as the subject of this lecture, you will find, is an undercut of an undercut of an undercut. You're getting something on the order of about 90% already, with the existent formulas and so forth. This is picking up the additional 10. But in view of the fact that you may run into them at any time, in view of the fact it may make far better, faster auditing at any time, I would advise anybody auditing, starting in on a case, to use this scale. Thank you.